Good morning, everybody. The meeting is being recorded. It's 8:30 a.m. on October 29th, 2024. Dr. Bustillo, after you call the meeting to order, we'll do a roll call of the board members and staff and proceed with the reading of the board's mission statement.
Welcome, everyone. I'd like to call the October 29, 2024 State Board of Physical Therapy meeting to order.
Thank you. Dr. Bustillo.
Here.
Dr. King.
Here.
Mr. Leone.
Here.
Mr. Greer.
Here.
Mr. Barton.
Here.
Dr. Hike. Ms. Crowley. Ms. Crowley, you may be muted. Ms. Bryant.
Here.
Ms. Richardson.
Present.
Dr. Sinish.
Here.
Ms. Crowley. Okay, I know she was here. My name is Judy Chepius. I anticipate that both Dr. Hike and Ms. Crowley will be joining us momentarily. But Dr. Bustillo, the meeting is yours.
First item of business is to approve the minutes for both the regular session and executive session A from October 1st, 2024.
Dr. Bustillo, first the mission statement.
Oh, excuse me. I am so sorry.
And Monica is here. She's texting. She's having audio issues. So I will only mark Dr. Hike absent at the moment.
Dr. King.
Good morning, everyone. I'd like to take a moment to read our mission statement. The mission of the Arizona Board of Physical Therapy is to protect the public from the incompetent and professional and unlawful practice of physical therapy. The Arizona Physical Therapy Practice Act establishes the standards for the practice of physical therapy, continuing competence, and testing, and defines the scope and limitations of practice. The board licenses qualified applicants as physical therapists and physical therapist assistants and receives, investigates, and adjudicates complaints against licensees.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right, so then we can move to approving the minutes for both the regular session and executive session A for October 1st, 2024. Are there any additions or corrections?
This is Mr. Barton. I move that we approve.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded to approve the consent agenda consisting of the regular session and executive session A meeting minutes from the October 1st, 2024 board meeting. Dr. Bustillo.
Yes.
Dr. King.
Yes.
Mr. Leone.
Yes.
Mr. Greer.
Yes.
Mr. Barton.
Yes.
Dr. Hike, questioning if he's joined us yet. No. Okay. That motion passes.
Great. We'll move on to applications for licensure, review, consideration, and possible action for a physical therapist applicant requesting ADA accommodations. Ellie Wilkin.
Ms. Wilkin has requested ADA accommodations. She has yet to complete the Arizona law exam. She was previously brought before the board at the, her request was brought before the board at the September 29th, 2023 meeting, at which time the board denied her previous request. She has taken the AZ law exam twice now unsuccessfully, and she is again requesting ADA accommodations. At this time, she is requesting additional time in a separate room. She has identified either double time or time and a half for her request for additional time. So the board is asked to review this information and to determine whether the applicant shall be granted the testing accommodations requested for the Arizona jurisprudence exam. If the board approves the request, Ms. Wilkin will be allowed to complete the application process by registering and taking the AZ law exam And board staff recommends the board's motion also state that this applicant will be granted a physical therapist assistant license upon receiving the completed application, including passing scores and final and official transcripts.
Judy, Ms. Wilkin, are you here with us?
Yes, I'm here. Good morning.
Oh, yeah. Okay, good. Good morning. I have a question, and maybe we asked it in September. I just don't recall. You've already taken the NPTE, is that correct?
Oh, yes. So I'm initially from Illinois, and I moved here last year. Yes, I was licensed for about 7 years from Illinois. So the national exam was completed. I had plenty of time on that test, so I was successful with that.
Did you have an accommodation for that test or if Illinois has a jurisprudence test?
So no, we did not have to take a jurisprudence. It was just take the national exam and then we got our license.
Okay. Thank you. And did you have an accommodation for that national licensure exam 7 years ago?
So I don't believe so. It was vague. I might have.
Okay.
But I think they gave you a lot more time, which I felt comfortable with, but 200 question tests. So I might have on that.
Okay.
I don't recall.
Okay. Thank you.
And Ms. Wilkin, it seems like you've recently undergone quite a bit of testing.
Yes.
To really hone in on a diagnosis and help you manage. Has that been helpful for you?
Yeah. So last year when I took the exam, the jurisprudence here with you guys, I had just moved from across the U.S. I had a lot going on, moving into a new place, getting adjusted, just the process of everything with applying to take the exam and studying. It triggered a lot more anxiety, and it was just very, nerve-wracking. When I first joined the meeting, I didn't say as much. I felt like I was prepared, but I just had so much going on, So I feel like I still struggle, even though I take medicine for anxiety. It does affect my everyday life. A lot of different things trigger my anxiety along with my ADHD. It could be situational or just things at random. I do have set things that do always trigger, my anxiety, and I feel like my anxiety and my ADHD really butt heads. I could be really hyper talkative, and then it kind of intertwines with those anxious, panicky feelings, always go, go, go. I feel like am I speaking too much? Sorry.
No, it's helpful to know how this affects your everyday life.
Yeah. I actually wrote quite a bit down. Because with the anxious feelings speaking, it just helps to have it all written down. So I will kind of keep it as simple as I can, but kind of read through. So anybody can get anxious for a test, but for me, it specifically affects me in multiple ways to where I need more time and would benefit from a separate room. And I'll explain those many factors that contribute. It's not just the worry and the nerves being anxious. It's all those things that come with it. It's not just the test and the testing in general, which is something important to me. It affects my everyday life too, just having this worry and nerves and panicky feelings and things that just trigger feeling uncomfortable. It was really difficult last year not having enough time. It caused heightened anxiety. And again, the combination of ADHD makes me fidgety and panicky and frustrated and just having a difficult time paying attention to that limited time. The time restriction I'm focused on, rushed, panicky. I do have a history of panic attacks, which is rare, but if I start to get too worried, and, you know, with my asthma as well, it kind of works me up.
When was the last time you took the AZ law exam?
It was last year. Last year.
All right.
Yeah.
In
October.
Are you working in physical therapy at all?
No. I'm actually, it's somewhat related. I'm caregiving.
Mm-hmm.
But nothing physical therapy wise.
Does anyone else have any questions?
Yeah, Ms. Wilkin, you mentioned difficulty with kind of like tracking time. Can you explain that a little bit more in depth in terms of just your everyday life? Not necessarily in a test situation, but just what things that maybe you do to try and help with that?
Yes. So actually one of the things on a daily basis that I struggle with, anything time related drives my anxiety up pretty good. So I always try to be on time when it comes to like a meeting and work. I arrive like 10 minutes early, 15. Otherwise I get panicky and flustered if I'm running behind or feeling rushed. Being around a lot of people, you know, if I'm speaking to them, you know, I feel like it's very difficult to maintain the anxiety like I am right now, a little anxious, of course. But time-wise, if I'm getting ready, if I can't be in control of how much time I have to get ready or like a test and I feel rushed, I'm just focused on that time and thinking, okay, the time is ticking. And I personally have to reread and sometimes re-ask questions because my processing speed is delayed. And it's troublesome for me to not look over my work and just process everything that I'm reading for the test.
Thank you.
Ms. Wilkin, this is Mr. Barton. Can you tell me a little bit? So I'm reading through the neuropsychological report that we have, and I don't want to share. I don't want to publicly disclose much of what I see in there.
I appreciate it.
Just for your privacy. But I would like to know, are there accommodations or changes you make in your day-to-day life to deal with this ADHD, and what is that?
I mean, like I said, I do take medicine, but there are certain things that trigger, and I can't control the feeling. You know, I get worried about something or nervous, and it's just, it takes over internally to where I just can't snap out of it, even with medicine. I try hard in certain circumstances that affect my everyday life to work at it, but sometimes it's just, I have to accept what it is and just kind of live with it, but,
So I guess my question would be then, like, so you say that you try to have some things that you do to deal with it. What are those things, and, are they effective?
I feel like I just kind of step away from the moment I'm having with anxiety. I mean, that ADHD and the anxiety really just butt heads, because if I'm really hyperactive, you know, I'm cleaning, I'm bouncing around, go, doing things. If I'm kind of relaxed and calm and collected at one moment, you know, I feel anxious because I feel like I need to be doing things and thoughts running through my head that just, you know, when I try and sleep at nighttime or just every day, like with a planner, you know, I have to have everything organized. Otherwise I feel like I go crazy, anxious. And again, that ADHD just kind of reflects off the anxiety, making me so bouncing everywhere doing things. And then I just get anxious from not doing something and completing a task and being able to focus on it, or, you know, I'm distracted and it's hard to focus due to like external factors. It's kind of hard because of how hyper of a person I can be, and I could ramble and get anxious, and then I'm talking a lot like I am now. It's just kind of, I feel like it's hard to do anything to settle it. I mean, cleaning wise, I clean a lot throughout my house, and that kind of takes my mind off of, like, you know, the go, go, go with ADHD. Like focusing on a task kind of takes my mind off of my crazy, you know, racing thoughts and hyperness, and I'm focused on something. So that's why it's difficult for me when I take a test, because those clash together. I have a hard time processing the questions. I have to reread over and over, really break the questions down to process it. It just makes it difficult to complete a test in a limited time because of those disabilities that I have. As you can probably see, you know, as I'm speaking, I'm just like, I'm confident. I'm a confident person. It doesn't take away from being a great physical therapist assistant. You know, when I'm working with patients, I really try hard to, you know, slow my roll down, talk so they can understand me, not ramble, which is difficult for me because of that hyperactive disability I have. So I try hard, but it's just kind of one of those things I have to adjust with and kind of live with.
Let me dive in on that a little bit with your physical therapy assistant work or your other work. Do you have any kind of an accommodation?
Yes.
Like, do you need additional time to fill out documentation or work? Do you have a room set aside to kind of help you fill out documentation? Tell me about that.
Sorry, could you briefly ask the question again?
Sure. So I'm asking if you have any accommodations in your current job. Like, do you have a separate room that you use for documentation when you're caring for patients? Do you have additional time than your colleagues to fill out your documentation or complete your documentation?
So with that being said, so since I'm doing caregiving right now, I have sweet little old ladies who, you know, they're like my grandma, and I feel comfortable with them to where that doesn't disrupt, you know, I could be hyper with them and goofy and silly, and, you know, I'm a companion to them. It doesn't really make me feel like I need a separate room for that instance. It's more so the testing wise, you know, I feel like surrounded by all these other people testing, little noises that people might be making from their little stimulants, like that just really drives me, and I'm focused on that. And then I'm thinking of all the things in my head that bother me. So yeah, no, not with caregiving. It's just, I fill out on my phone a little work blurb about the patient in the day, and it's simple. So it's nothing to feel so anxious about. It's just that testing, you know, that time limit, that the distractions around me, that sort of thing.
So I'm curious what you have done. So are there other aspects, or are there aspects of your job where you're time limited? Like, I assume that if you're working as a caregiver, there are there's documentation that needs to be done within a certain amount of time, or there's you know, time limits on how long you can stay at a certain building or a certain, or not building, at a certain home. What do you do to handle those things?
So I work shifts, like 4 or 6 hour shifts, and my clients can be anywhere from simple to difficult, which I've been lucky enough to have fairly easy, more companion clients. So it makes it really at ease for me to where I don't have that feeling that I need to, documentation wise. It's literally like on our phones, we just fill out, you know, how the client's doing, if they're independent, with ADLs or not, what we did that day. And those are straightforward things that I don't feel anxious about and I'm good at, you know, because it has to, it kind of ties in with therapy. You know, you fill out your paperwork at the end of the day. You know what you did with that client. So it's pretty much just, you know, I did this with them. I helped them up from the chair. Whereas again, testing related, that, you know, my processing speed, I'm distracted, I feel hyperactive and fidgety. That's a totally different thing when I'm answering questions that I've studied for, but sometimes the questions seem like they're a little bit tricky, and that situation is different than documentation for a client. So.
So it sounds, and I'm trying to summarize what you're saying, so make sure you tell me if I'm mistaken. It sounds like what you're saying is that this, you feel like this kind of affects your test taking, but not really your day-to-day life. Is that fair? Or am I misstating?
Yeah, so if I can actually read a little bit of what I typed, it does affect my day-to-day life, but there are certain things that trigger more heightened anxiety. I always feel like I have that hyper feeling, but sometimes I could control it because in certain situations, you know, I'm like, okay, I need to be calm and collected, but sometimes I'm just rambling and talking fast like I kind of am here. And I just, it's hard for me to slow down and, you know, I really got to focus on doing that. So yeah, if I could read a couple things about the day-to-day life that it affects.
Yeah, please.
Great. I typed some stuff out because that was supposed to help me, you know, read from it. Okay. So I'm a very hyperactive person. So that's the ADHD. I'll feel on edge and anxious internally. Like it's that feeling that you just can't control. It's over nothing. Like I could wake up in the morning or go to bed at nighttime and just feel that unease in my chest and in my body that I just, it's like, what is this? Like I can't get rid of it. But also it's a feeling of discomfort over nothing or just whatever triggers me. It can be a wide range of factors. For example, when I get together with friends, go out, get out of the house, test taking, it spikes my anxiety. Driving around certain people, you know, I get anxious thinking with how bad some of the drivers are here. If I have to go out with friends and speak, you know, I'm a confident person, but around a larger crowd, you know, or just one-on-one, I get anxious and nervous. Even though I take my medicine, it still happens. Let's see. My appetite is actually affected with my anxiety. For example, this is a good one. I feel like if I'm going to go out and do something and I haven't ate that day, like I'm too anxious and ready to go and hyper to just get out the door and then I don't eat. Like the test taking, I have to reread. And sometimes like with you guys, if you're asking questions, like for example, the processing is difficult for me, so I have to ask you to repeat yourself, and that's why I have to reread the questions to really, because it's just like a delayed processing for me at times, especially if it's a longer question. I just feel like I'm distracted with my thoughts, I lose my focus, train of thought, kind of bouncing around with tasks. It's difficult to stay focused on one thing unless I really try hard to. Let's see.
Ms. Wilkin, do you feel like you've been well prepared to take the test?
From last year?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Honestly, I studied a lot and I feel like that's another struggle when I study. Like, I can read through things multiple times, and after studying for so long, it sinks better. But it's still challenging for me because I feel like with my ADHD especially, it's hard to focus and study good. I mean, I do study good, but it just, that distractibility with the ADHD, because I'm so hyperactive, it makes it a little more challenging to focus on my studying. But I did do a great deal of studying. I felt confident. I was prepared, positive. And yeah, I studied really well for it. So
yeah. I mean, you've taken the test twice now, from what I understand. And you understand now the types of questions that will be asked. Do you feel like that can help you in preparation?
Yeah, I've thought a little bit about if I'm reading through the statutes and the rules, like, oh, this is kind of something that they kind of asked on the test. So I try and think of that when I study. But still, like, when I take a test like I did, like I took it twice, and the second time I still didn't pass. It felt like that restriction of time. If I would have had more time to feel at ease to look through my work, because I always have to reread through everything and say, okay, like I know this is right. And then if I was unsure of some, like I have to go back to those, and I ran out of time. And, you know, some questions I take longer on because if they're longer, and they seem tricky to me, and I'm like, I just, that ADHD, I can't decide on an answer. It's very difficult to, you know.
So were you not able to finish the test, or you just rushed through it?
I felt rushed, and I barely finished the test as a thing, and I really didn't have the time to look it over, and the questions I was unsure about, I tried not to spend too much time on and go back to after, but I ran out of time. So that's a big thing that just really made me uneasy and panicked because, you know, I studied so great for it. I was confident, but I didn't have enough time to go back. And again, some of the questions are more tricky than others, and like processing those questions were difficult for me. So
okay, does anyone else have any questions?
No.
What are everyone's thoughts?
Says Mr. Greer, I certainly sympathize with the applicant, but I just don't see a disability that affects a major life function as required by the ADA. She certainly has access to the test, and I have no doubt she would do better on the test if she had more time, but that's not the standard. The standard is just access. So my thoughts would be to deny.
Can I say something?
We'll give you a chance in a minute. We're going to discuss for a little bit.
Okay.
It's Kelly. For me, this is a tough one. I know life with anxiety and ADHD can be really hard, and it's hard to put your thumb on like how it affects your life, because it's just your life. It's what you know. It's how you know it. You don't even know that you're accommodating because you're just trying to get through the day. So I can certainly sympathize with her trying to stay focused in her mind when her mind is racing. And super easily distracted, like me. And so I would be in support of a separate room and try to limit distractions, because I know that can really be a thing. But I think the time is hard. It's hard for everyone. Mm-hmm. You know, everyone feels the clock ticking and can hear it in your brain. So I think the distraction, I think her reports from her physician, the medical practitioner, supported that she's very easily distracted, has a hard time staying focused. So I would support a separate room, but not necessarily more time.
I would be in agreement with that as well. I think the separate room will definitely be beneficial. One of the things I noticed on here, we had asked if, I think Mr. Barton had asked if she had, or I can't remember who asked, to be honest with you, if she had any accommodations for the MPTE. It looks like she had additional time on the MPTE that was approved in Illinois. So, I mean, I would be open to what you're talking about, Dr. King, at least giving a separate room to try and limit distractions, and hopefully that will, you know, allow her to focus a little bit better in there. Because, yeah, I definitely, you know, empathize with her on, you know, I'm sure this affects her in so many ways that she probably can't even explain to us in terms of just her daily life.
Thanks for looking that up, Giovanni.
Yeah.
And so based off that, I, as well as the neuropsych evaluation and the responses, I would be in favor of both time and the room.
So I guess I'll speak up. You know, my perspective on this is I agree with Dr. King. I think this one is hard. I think that it's you know, I see a lot of the difficulty in processing, and I think that's why I asked a lot of these questions, is I really want to get at how this affects a major life function. And the difficulty that I'm having here is, as I look at it, I'm having a hard time seeing a major life function that's impaired. And in my mind, that's kind of the fundamental first standard that we have to get to. And I just, I don't see, I'm having a hard time seeing how that actually gets affected here. And with that being the case, it makes me hesitant to grant accommodations because, as Mr. Greer said, right, the standard is access and the standard is a major life function being impaired. And I'm having a hard time identifying what that major life function would be. You know, and I kind of understand what Ms. Wilkin is saying generally, that this is something that is, you know, means that she has to focus a little bit more, but it doesn't seem like she needs accommodations when she's doing her current job. When she talks about, I mean, she talks a lot about the kind of feelings that she has when she's doing day-to-day tasks, like going to the groceries. But the thing that I felt was lacking is it doesn't sound like she's doing anything extra than the rest of us are doing when we're trying to deal with the kind of distractions and difficulties that come along with being anxious or having this kind of stress. And so that's kind of where I am. Is I'm leaning towards no, but I do, you know, I sympathize, and it looks like it's difficult. It just, I don't know that it's a major life function impairment.
Yeah, I'm torn. I believe she does have access. But I also feel that, you know, even just with her talking with us today and the quick, somewhat rambling nature of her comments, mm-hmm. you can see how her mind is just going and going and going. And so I do feel that maybe a separate room where there aren't the fingers tapping and the keyboards clacking and people shuffling their feet or whatever could help with that. Time, I think it's a time test, and most of our testing is, and it's difficult, but I feel like that's something that we all have to try to figure out how to work through.
Agree, yeah. And I don't want to put words in her mouth, and I totally agree with you, Karen. I do think, though, that it's interesting when we ask people to tell us how it affects their daily life. I will tell you that I know for a fact that people with anxiety and ADHD and panic attacks avoid things.
Absolutely.
They choose the jobs that don't create those
absolutely
feelings. And so yes. They're like, it doesn't really affect me. But they choose jobs where it doesn't affect them. They avoid things that
create those feelings and situations. So it's just interesting that often we hear it doesn't, but I think that that's from my experience anyway, is by selection of ways to not create these thoughts and feelings and situations for myself. But, yeah. I'll make a motion that.
Well, I think we have a motion.
Oh, we do?
I think Mr. Greer made a motion. No,
I don't think I did. I was just sharing my thoughts.
Okay. Thank you.
So I'll make a motion that we approve a separate testing room, for Ms. Watkins for the, Wilkins, sorry, for the, jurisprudence exam. And I think Judy said, and if she passes it, she's eligible for PTA licensure once she passes that exam.
Yeah.
Dr. King, Dr. Bustillo, I know that the applicant wanted to make a statement. It may help me just to understand kind of what her thoughts are now that she kind of understands the standard that we're looking at. Is the board opposed to maybe hearing
that
response?
Ms. Wilkin, what would you like to say?
Yeah, so I feel like I went through extensive testing. Neurological testing. I'm sorry. Hold on. I went through extensive testing to get proof of a disability, and I spent time and money that I barely have just because I'm so dedicated to this career and I want to get back into it. And I feel like I specifically mainly wanted the extra time, and it's hard for me to just explain that because, like, it's just difficult to explain. I don't know. And I feel that not being able to get extra time after all that work I put in specifically for that and having proof of a disability, why that is going to be denied. I feel like I have that proof and it should justify enough with all the reports. I took like 5 hours of testing and I did all that extensive work for nothing. I feel like having proof of disability doesn't justify, you know, or, you know, having a disability and all that proof. How can you justify not giving extra time when I put all that work and time and effort and you guys have the option for accommodations and I have the proof and being able to deny that. That just doesn't seem right to me, you know? I want this so bad and I just really would appreciate extra time. I'm sorry, I'm just having a moment.
It's okay. Thank you for sharing your passion and in your feelings about this. We know it's very important to you.
I do have an additional question that maybe might help to give us a little bit more perspective on the time issue, because that's really where I was trying to go with my previous question. So, Ms. Wilkin, you said that you've been working as a PTA for 7 years in Illinois. What setting were you working in?
I worked in a variety of settings. I was mainly in the hospital, and I also worked at the outpatient clinic across from there. I took over for maternity leave at a pediatric place. I've worked with all ages from, you know, pediatrics to geriatrics. Hospital, outpatient, and pediatrics, but mainly hospital and outpatient.
Okay. And I mean, just from my experience in the hospital setting, you're kind of on your own schedule. Like you have a certain amount of patients that you have to see, I'm sure.
Correct.
But it's been my experience that you're kind of on your own schedule and you can kind of go see people as you want. But
right.
The majority of my experience is in the outpatient setting where I know that I'm always on a time crunch.
Yes.
So with that setting and maybe even the pediatric setting that you were working in, if it was kind of a similar thing, how did you manage a schedule and stay on track with, you know, knowing that you had a patient coming up within the next, however long your schedule was, 30 minutes or 40 minutes, be able to get through that entire treatment session effectively hand off that patient or delegate care to, you know, another person to maybe take over so that you can move on to your next patient. How were you managing that in regards to what you deal with on an everyday basis?
Yeah, so that's one of those things that I had trouble with for the longest time. Time, there we go again with the time, you know, taking the clock and saying, okay, I have 40 minutes for this patient. I'm going to include a good quality treatment and do everything on the plan of care that I can in that time period. And if I don't have time for something, then I, you know, that's okay because you kind of change it up and do what you can each visit. I feel like I would always have my watch to look at and say, okay, it's 15 minutes till you're done. Let's end on, you know, stretches or end on the bike. And then I know that I could get my next patient in time and get them out so I can grab my patient that's next in a timely manner. It was rough for a long time because, you know, you get so into your patient and you're focused on them and you want the best for them and you're doing all these things you can to get them better. And sometimes you lose track of time and you're not focused on that because you're focused on the patient. But you have to adjust, you know, your attention, to the time because, you know, you have to do that. You have other clients to see and that's one of those things that you have to better yourself at to, you know, adjust to the time that you need to be done with the patient.
So I'm hearing that it was something that was a struggle for you to try and get to that point where you could potentially manage that. Was there a long period of time where you felt like you did fall behind and you were late for most of your patients and you couldn't kind of keep track of it?
Yeah, with being anxious and that hyperactive when I'm like focused on my patient and then I'm like, uh-oh, it's close to time and say they have a question and they have something that they want to do and I don't have time and I have to explain to them, you know, I have my next client, you know, it was a hard process to adjust and figure out how do I end on time and how do I get everything out of this patient to give them a good quality treatment and then get my next client in a timely manner. Well, I would just be like 5-10 minutes behind for so long. And then it would just, you know, increase the time further out to where I was so behind. But, you know, after a period of time, I slowly became better about it. It might have been like, okay, 5 minutes behind, but then I'd stay 5 minutes extra and get my next patient 5 minutes after, but I would still give them their full treatment. But I was just, that time was just such a challenge. It's always, time is such a big thing for me, and I've been able to better myself by thinking, okay, I need to be, what's the word? Punctual. I need to be punctual. I just have to because that's that's what I need to do. So I worked hard to adjust my ways, to be more punctual, and it eventually, it all worked out, because we all go through struggles that, you know, I feel it's good to better ourselves on, to recognize our wrongs or things that we could work on, and I worked hard at it. So, you know, and eventually I was perfect on my timing. You know, I'm always early to work and, you know, very punctual.
Ms. Wilkins, did, in that setting, did it affect your work performance or performance reviews?
I always got fairly great reviews. You know, it might have, I actually had times where at an evaluation they would say, you know, we see that you're great with your patients, you know, you are very accommodating, patient, respectable, but I've had times where they've said the time was, you know, people complain about, oh, they're running behind. And, you know, everyone can run behind sometimes. You know, it happens at the doctor's office or, you know, the dentist, anywhere. But they did acknowledge, you know, time-wise or my performance, and explain that to me. You know, that I need to be better about that. You know, I used to be cutting it close to work because it's like getting ready in the morning. The anxiety getting ready and feeling rushed, even if I wake up early enough, sometimes I just, I don't know, I take a while to get ready and then I'm on the road and I'm cutting it close to work. And I actually had my boss a few years ago mention that, and then I adjusted it and I tried so hard, you know, but those disabilities kind of took over, but I had to kind of take control back and work at it to be better. And okay. I have.
All right. Thank you for sharing. Are there any other questions that'll help clarify?
Just one more. In regards to your documentation in those settings, Ms. Wilkin, how when do you typically get that done? Or do you fall behind on your documentation by, you know, a day, 2 days, 3 days, like kind of give us a little bit of insight on how that works for you.
Yeah, documentation wise was another challenge. And, you know, over time when you're first fresh out of school and you're licensed, it, you have your clinicals, but to be actually set in the setting, documenting, treating clients, having to be, you know, on top of everything, it was something that you just had to work at and improve at. So it was difficult for me to document. I'm a fast typer, and I can be particular on what I say and how I say things because I want it to be, I'm not a perfectionist, but you know, I just, like, I want to get it done, but I also take my time because I want it to be, I want to say everything that needs to be documented, what the client said, how they did, the outcome. Great documentation. So it did take me more time to complete, for outpatient. It was back to back clients. So you had lunchtime to get all your notes done and you barely got a lunch. So it was like, I felt like I had to rush. And then, you know, the next client's coming in and I'm still deep in my notes. And so outpatient was a really tough setting for time and for documenting. So,
okay.
Yeah.
That's helpful. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a motion on the floor.
Yeah, Karen, I think if I could amend the motion and then we can move from there, I will change the motion to approve for both time and separate room.
Time and a half, mm-hmm. Is that?
Time and a half in a separate room.
And I would second that.
Any further discussion?
I disagree. I don't have, it's not that I don't have sympathy for the applicant, but I do think the applicant is mistaking a diagnosis with a disability. No one's saying she doesn't have ADHD, but I just don't see how it affects. You know, I understand everyone would do better if we gave them more time in a separate room on the exam. That's universal. Everyone would do better. That's not the standard. The standard is, we do not guarantee success. We provide access to the exam. I think she has access to the exam, and I'm going to vote no on the motion.
Yeah, I totally get what you're saying, Josh. I do. And I think the fact that she was given extra time for the national exam, so it's already been, there's precedence in a times test where whatever she turned in was approved. And she's practiced for a while, so I get it. I totally hear what you're saying. I think if she did not have time before, I wouldn't even think about it, but someone's already given her extra time. She's proven her point before to someone who made these decisions. I think that that's a little, it muddies the water a little bit for me.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think she tells a compelling story. Like I said, I have sympathy for it. I don't think she meets the standard of what's required for us to. I think under the circumstances that she described, we would need to approve it for every applicant, because I think every applicant tells a very similar story.
Yes, they do. Although she does have a significant amount of documentation that we don't get from many people.
Except when you look at I look at it and I see the diagnosis, but I also see average. I don't see a disability in her. I think that report, I don't think it helps her case very much at all. I think it surely provides a diagnosis, but it describes someone who can deal with the day-to-day aspects of lives without accommodation.
Dr. Hike, you have a comment? Yeah.
Without going into all the specifics, the neuropsych exam, I think, is telling enough to me. And you mentioned some of the things, but some of the other things that are mentioned in the neuropsych exam convince me to vote yes. She needs time, and she needs another room, and she's had it before. So I do agree with you, Josh, but I think in this case, it is different than the other cases for those reasons.
Okay. I think any other discussion? You ready, Judy?
I believe so. So it's been moved and seconded to approve Ailey Wilkins' request for ADA accommodations of time and a half and a separate room, and that she can be licensed following the completion of her application, including successfully passing scores and official transcripts. Dr. Vecchio.
Oh, yes.
Before we take this vote, I want to report for the record that Dr. Hike did join the meeting at 8:37. That was right at the starting time of this case. So I just wanted to make that note for the record. Thank you. Dr. Vecchio just voted yes. Dr. King?
Yes.
Mr. Leone?
Yes.
Mr. Greer?
No.
Mr. Barton?
No.
Dr. Hike?
Yes.
That motion passes.
Good luck on the test, Ms. Wilkins.
Thank you guys for your time. I appreciate it. Have a good one.
Okay, we'll move on to 4.3, review, consideration, and possible action regarding approving supervised clinical practice period, facility, and therapists proposed by foreign educated physical therapist applicants, Heba Amira.
And Dr. Bastillo, these requests are similar for the next two agenda items. Heba Amira was found substantially equivalent at our April 23rd, 2024 meeting and was required to complete a supervised clinical practice period of 500 hours. She has submitted a supervised clinical practice period agreement, including a primary and secondary supervisor and a facility that was provided to the board for review. The board is requested to determine whether the facility and primary and secondary supervisors should be approved.
I'll move to approve her supervised clinical practice period with the supervising physical therapist and facility provided.
Second.
Any discussion?
It's been moved and seconded to approve the supervised clinical practice period facility and supervising physical therapists proposed by Heba Amira. Dr. Bastillo?
Yes.
Dr. King?
Yes.
Mr. Leone?
Yes.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
Mr. Barton?
Yes.
Dr. Hike?
Yes.
That motion passes.
And our second person that needs a supervised clinical practice period and supervising physical therapist approved is Melissa Warren.
Correct. And she was found substantially equivalent at the March 26, 2024 meeting and was required to complete a supervised clinical practice period of 500 hours. Ms. Warren has also submitted to the board for review and approval a primary and secondary supervisor, as well as a facility where she wishes to complete her supervised clinical practice period.
Dr. Bustillo, is Ms. Warren on the call with us by chance?
Yes, I am.
Oh, great. Okay, good. Can I ask her a question really quick?
Sure.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So you submitted two supervisors for your supervised clinical practice. One of them has a good number of years, but one has been practicing just under a year. And I know for clinical instructors taking students, the minimum requirement is at least a year of full time. So which of those will you be spending more time with? Because I just am a little bit concerned about a therapist with less than a year of practice supervising you and your supervised clinical practice. Does that make sense?
Yes, okay. I understand. Yep.
Okay.
I believe I will be under the owner, Matt.
Okay.
He is the primary physical therapist. Okay. And then the secondary one is just on the off chance that Matt is not present.
Okay. Thank you. Is there any other questions? I can make a motion.
Go ahead.
Okay. I move that we approve the supervised clinical practice facility and the supervised clinical practice practitioner supervisors who will be working with Ms. Warren.
Second.
Any further discussion? Okay.
It's been moved and seconded to approve the supervised clinical practice period facility and supervising physical therapists proposed by Melissa Warren. Dr. Bastillo?
Yes.
Dr. King?
Yes.
Mr. Leone?
Yes.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
Mr. Barton?
Yes.
Dr. Hike?
Yes.
That motion passes.
Great. Good luck.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Good luck.
So we'll move on to our consent agenda. We have applications for physical therapist licensure. And we're going to just review everyone's name here. Derek Wilson and Brady Kurtz. Physical therapist assistants licensure, Sean Covert and Kelly Foster, and termination of board order for Jitin Dungarani. Does anyone need any of these people pulled off the consent agenda? Okay. Then I'll move that we approve all items on the consent agenda.
Second.
Okay, I think we're ready.
It's been moved and seconded to approve consent agenda items 5A, 5B, and 5C. Dr. Bastillo?
Yes.
Dr. King?
Yes.
Mr. Leone?
Yes.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
Mr. Barton?
Yes.
Dr. Hike?
Yes.
That motion passes. For all of those individuals that Dr. Bastillo called, the board has moved on your request and or application, You're welcome to stay for the rest of the meeting, but you're also free to exit should you choose to do so. If you have any questions, they can be addressed to board staff after the meeting.
Okay, so there's no items under 6, 7, and 8, and we're up to item 9, initial reviews. And I have, there's two people on the list for that, and I do have a script that we need to read for this. This is the time and place scheduled for the board's initial review of complaints. There are two cases for the board to consider. Matters will be heard by the board pursuant to its authority under ARS 32-2045. For everyone's benefit, I'll provide a brief summary on how the board conducts initial reviews. The summary applies to all cases that we will hear, and I will not repeat it for each case. I will begin with introductions. My name is Dr. Bustillo, and I'm the board's chairperson, and I'll now ask the other board members to introduce themselves.
Good morning. Dr. Kelly King, professional member, board vice president.
Giovanni Leone, professional member, board secretary.
Joshua Greer, public member.
Joshua Barton, public member.
John Hike, professional member.
Thank you. For all those participating in the initial reviews, please be aware that we have read all the materials submitted. If at any time it's necessary to refer to patients, please use initials only. In each case, the board will first hear a brief summary of the investigative report from its staff. Once staff is done, the board will ask the complainant, if present, if they wish to address the board, and then the board will ask the professional, if present, and their attorney or representative, if they would like to do the same. In order to give everyone the same opportunity to address the board, we ask those speaking not to take time repeating information that the board has already received. You will be given the same amount of time to address the board it took to present the investigative report, or 5 minutes, whichever is greater. Please keep in mind that this is not the time or place for the complainant and the professional to address each other. The board has a civility policy that prohibits the use of any type of disruptive conduct. Those violating the policy after being given an opportunity to modify their behavior will be removed from the meeting room. Once the board concludes its discussion with the parties, it will move into deliberations. While the parties are free to stay and listen to deliberations, we ask that you respect the fact that we are now discussing the case amongst ourselves and request that you do not interrupt the process. The board's options include, but are not limited to, dismissing the complaint, taking non-disciplinary action such as issuing an advisory letter or order for continuing education, offering the professional a consent agreement, requesting the professional participate in an informal hearing, or remanding the matter to formal hearing. The board may also determine whether the matter warrants referral to any other agency or authority. Before we call the case, I want to advise everyone that the initial reviews are audio recorded. Accordingly, it is important that everyone speak loudly and clearly, and that only one person speak at a time. Lastly, as a reminder to the board, this is not an informal hearing. If you have a few questions that will help you better understand the case and take action to potentially resolve the case through dismissal, non-disciplinary action, or a consent agreement for either disciplinary or non-disciplinary action, please feel free to ask them. However, if you have a number of substantive questions and or feel the case requires additional investigation or may warrant referral to another agency or authority, it may be more appropriate to move the case to an informal hearing. Our first case is case 2420, William Brown, PT.
Good morning, members of the board. I believe Mr. Brown is in the meeting. Mr. Brown, you identify yourself. You may be muted if you're speaking. I can see him on the list of attendees. And I don't see the complainant present.
Okay. I think I'm on now.
Oh, good.
Yes.
I'm on. Am I, can you hear me?
Yes. Good morning, Mr. Brown. We can hear you. And is patient EA present?
I hear that. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Let me go ahead with the summary of the case. Patient EA. I'm sorry, did somebody say something? Okay. This is case 2420. Patient EA alleged that Mr. Brown provided only 15 to 20 minutes of treatment, but she was billed for 45 minutes. The evidence supports at least 45 minutes of treatment. The patient also had a complaint that was regarding a billing dispute, but she was previously informed that the board would not be addressing this dispute as it's not part of our jurisdiction. You reviewed this case as a preliminary review at your August meeting, and you cited you voted to move this to open a case, and you cited ARS 3224E420, failing to maintain adequate patient records. As it relates to R424304, adequate patient records, number six, for each date of service, there is an accurate record of the physical therapy services provided and billed. Mr. Brown did receive a copy of the investigative report and provided a written supplemental response, which was included in your board review materials as Exhibit 6. He is semi-retired. He's been practicing for over 40 years, and he's not had a board complaint in his career. This case is for your review.
Mr. Brown, are you willing to answer questions from the board?
Yes. Can you hear me now? I just now got my audio up.
Yes, thank you.
Okay, great. Just now got it.
I had a question, from holdover from August. And I guess my basic question really was, your documentation does support 45 minutes. Is there any reason to think that the patient was not there for 45 minutes for her normal treatment time?
No, there is not. If you look at the exercise log alone, there's 4 minutes of warm up, 2 stretches, 9 exercises she completed each time. And if you look at 1 minute on each of those with a minute of rest between, that alone is close to 30 minutes just in exercise time alone. And I was with her the entire time. As you can see, I signed the exercise log each time. So, and I don't know where she's coming from on the, on that, so.
Great. Any further questions?
Dr. Brown, I did want to ask you about the second and third treatment of the patient here. It looks like there may have been a billing discrepancy there, that they may have received 45 minutes of care and been billed for an hour. Do you have any idea what happened there?
I addressed that billing situation in my amended response to the board. It should be, I sent it to Mindy last week.
Okay. Yeah. I've read that. Is there anything you'd like to add there or kind of expand upon, or are you happy with your response there?
Okay. I'm happy with that. You'd see that she was Blue Cross Blue Shield. It's different than a Medicare billing. So.
And then I have a question in terms of the phone call. If you were present for the phone call, or if you were made aware of the phone call that took place, or the patient had stated that took place with the, I think she said the owner of the practice. Any response to that in terms of the argument that the patient made about talking to the owner? And if you are aware of that.
Yeah, I read her response about that, and I know the owner personally. I've known her for close to 40 years, and right. I found that the accusations to her were pretty unusual.
Mm-hmm. And it looks like on the forms that we have, there's an actual initial next to the statement about the patient calling in. And so I'm wondering then, in terms of that initial, if that would be the front office person, office manager, I'm not sure what the title specifically would be if that's a normal practice for Carefree, because I do know the owner as well. I would assume then that that is the case. Is that normal practice that whoever is, you know, taking the call would initial next to that?
I'm not sure. I never had anything to do with the front office. Just back office totally. So.
Okay. All right. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Any further questions? Yeah. I'd like to make a motion to dismiss the complaint.
I'll second that.
Any discussion?
I'm curious if the board has any concerns about the documentation concerns. That's the only thing that was kind of keeping me a little bit up wondering about this.
I know that that was part of the investigative report. There were some concerns about documentation. I know he's semi-retired, but I would be in support of some CEUs around documentation.
Okay. I mean, maybe let me ask it this way then. So we've got a motion to dismiss currently pending. I
can withdraw that if...
Before I ask you to withdraw it, Dr. Castillo, I guess what I would be curious from the practitioners among us is, you know, I mean, I see kind of the technical, maybe failings of some of the documentation. From our practitioners, do you think it is enough that, you know, Dr. Brown is here, he's answered questions, he's seen the concerns, and are we confident that that's going to fix it, or do you think it warrants some additional CEUs to do it? Because I'd be open to the idea. I mean, it seems like Dr. Brown is here and quite willing to fix, you know, and explain himself and frankly has done so in a very compelling way. So I'm not, this isn't a situation where I'm really concerned that he doesn't necessarily know how to do it. But I'm curious from the practitioners because, you know, obviously for me as a layperson, I've seen these in this context. I see them with a critical eye in my professional context, but I'm curious from practitioners kind of do you think this is bad enough that we need some kind of corrective action, or do you think it's enough that we're here?
I feel like once something like this comes to your attention and you're brought before the board, you do a lot of self-reflection. And I don't feel his documentation was that far off the mark that in his limited practice at this point, he probably would have more than enough time, to complete records that are to standard.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm in agreement with you, Dr. Castillo. And the other thing that I looked at with this is, I mean, we have a sample size of 3 notes here, basically. I don't think that really paints a clear picture of what documentation looks like, but I don't see that the documentation is bad enough to warrant us asking or moving this forward and asking for more notes to review.
Yeah.
So I'm in the same agreement as Dr. Castillo.
And I'm sorry. Go ahead.
All I said was okay. So if you're waiting on me.
When I look at the initial evaluation and the comments about would allow another provider to assume the patient's care, I don't believe there is, and of course that could happen where he might become sick and someone else would need to take over for, you know, manual therapy in terms of the mobilization and the planar motions. But they've been working together for 40 years, and I don't think they have, as far as I know, techs or PTAs at that practice. So I'm not sure that that would actually happen in terms of someone else seeing his patients. So I don't find anything, I agree in terms of looking at the aspects of documentation that would say, no, he needs to do continuing education hours. That's my feeling on it.
Thank you.
I'm certainly not thinking anything along a disciplinary route, but I do think that, you know, for those of us who've been in practice for a really long time, we take our CEUs and our practice areas. We don't go back to the basics and take CEUs on documentation. And I don't think that that's a bad thing for us to do, to be reminded. I'm looking at Mindy's notes that some of the things don't actually meet the required elements, such as the discharge summary. So I don't think it's a bad thing. And he may do it on his own, but I think for us as a board, just to try to be consistent when we can, it could be an advisory, you could dismiss it. It could be an advisory letter encouraging him to take CEUs, or it could be a non-disciplinary and, you know, 3 hours of CEUs for documentation. I think that, you know, it's not egregious. We've certainly seen some really bad documentation, but I also think that some of it doesn't actually meet our standards. And I don't think we should, just negate addressing that.
I would be okay with doing a letter of concern, you know, advising them to consider taking CEUs for documentation. I would definitely be on board with that.
Sounds good. Karen, would you amend your, I don't know, can you do that?
Well, I'll withdraw my motion and feel free to make the other one.
Quick question for Mr. Harrison. If we make a motion regarding an advisory letter or a letter, do we dismiss and then send the letter, or does the letter just close the case, no further action, nothing else needed?
The motion could be to dismiss with an advisory letter, and you specify what you would like the advisory letter to express.
Perfect. Okay. So Karen, then do you want to amend your motion?
Yes, then I'll go ahead and make a motion to dismiss the case with an advisory letter that the therapist considered taking a documentation course to improve the quality of his documentation.
Second.
Any further discussion? Okay. I think we're ready when you are, Judy.
Okay. In case 2420 William Brown PT, it's been moved and seconded to dismiss with an advisory letter that Mr. Brown consider taking continuing education in the area of documentation to improve his record keeping and his documents. Dr. Bustillo.
Yes.
Dr. King.
Yes.
Mr. Leone.
Yes.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
Mr. Barton?
Yes.
Dr. Hike?
Yes.
That motion passes.
Okay. Thank you. Do you need to stop the recording, Judy?
We can certainly do that. That would be a good thing. It is 9:49, we are going to stop and restart the recording, so bear with me, please, one moment.